Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast.
Hello there, football fans, and welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast. Date, March the 2nd. How was your NHL trade deadline? Sucked, didn't it? It really sucked once again. But we will not discuss NHL deals today because John Molinaro is beside me, senior football writer from sportsnet.ca. He refuses to acknowledge any other sport outside of soccer.
That's not true. You can talk NHL. It's the other sport that I don't want you talking about on this podcast.
Which would be?
Which we're not going to mention.
It's okay. Okay.
We're not allowed to mention that? No.
We're not allowed to. No.
Stickball.
The gaffer. Molinaro.
Stickball, as I call it.
Dan Riccio is the other voice. He of TFC Pitchside on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Yeah, Monday nights at 11. Back for another season.
Like how we got the plug in there real quick.
Yeah. Pretty good, eh?
That was pretty good, Dan.
I shan't mention it again. I will. It's a great show. If you're a fan of MLS, especially obviously Toronto FC, make sure you listen. And as Dan mentioned, yes, indeed, we have a new season. The shortest postseason in Toronto sporting history comes to a close this weekend.
Is it five weeks?
Is that what it is?
Basically.
It feels like it, right?
December 10th to the January 22nd, 23rd when they reported back.
41 days, I think.
Yeah. I mean, usually it's like the longest postseason.
Right.
Because they bow out so early, right? But this is for the first time a real short one. Yes, MLS returns this weekend. I keep reading articles about how there's less star power this year with some, you know, veterans leaving. But then I read how Howard Webb is coming to Major League Soccer. I think, well, there's your star power. Howard Webb, he of many a controversial call, in his day a very good referee, though, of course, in the English Premier League, is now involved with PRO, Pro, and the video assistant referees, which they've been experimenting with through the preseason. The talk is they'll maybe introduce some video replay in the latter half of this season. How exciting is that, Dan?
Well, if there's any league that could use video assistance with their referees, it's probably Major League Soccer. So, I can't imagine how this ends up being bad, but once we finally get there, I mean, you see it, I know it's forsaken, but, you know, baseball has had tough times with the coaching challenges, and hockey, it's ridiculous, and even football has kind of seemingly gotten it right lately, the NFL has, but I'm glad that it's more, it's not about challenging, it's just somebody's watching the game as it happens, and if there's something that is incorrect, he's going to chime in and say, hey, we need to look at this.
That's an important point. It should be, yeah, that this isn't sort of like a challenge system where coaches kind of throw flags on the field when something contentious happens. It can only happen. Yeah. It can only happen when that sort of eye in the sky, you know, sees something and wants to review it. So I think that's going to help with, the kind of the flow and the rhythm of the game.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. And obviously it's not coming until, as mentioned, the second half of the season. But yeah, you're right. MLS needs some help for its poor, beleaguered officials. But I think overall this season, looking ahead, it's going to be a pretty exciting campaign. As I mentioned, some of the old veterans have left, but there's this new breed of young DP coming in. And that is exciting. And perhaps in some ways, TFC set the standard there when they signed Sebastian Giovinco, who wasn't perhaps a young player, but certainly a player in his prime, and it's worked out so well. TFC kick off this weekend against Real Salt Lake. It's been a strange off-season, but a very quiet off-season for TFC, which is the way they like it. Obviously, coming off that campaign where they just narrowly missed out on a championship. The core remains, give or take, incomes, Victor Vasquez and Chris Mavinga. Overall, though, I mean, would you consider them the favorites in the East at least?
Yeah, I think you have to look at them like that. I mean, they're bringing back basically the 11 from MLS Cup. They lost Will Johnson, but, you know, they have other players kind of in that ilk, and they needed somebody who can open up defenses rather than give more of that steel that Will Johnson brings. So Vasquez in for Will Johnson to me is a plus, assuming Vasquez acclimates well to Major League Soccer, and they add to their defensive line, add to their depth there. I mean, any other... This is how far MLS has come, right? You get a guy who was formerly in Liverpool's academy in Chris Mavinga, and people would get excited about that. A guy who was in Barcelona's academy, people would get excited about that. Now it's just like, oh, it was quiet offseason for TFC. You know, they didn't really do anything all that impressive. And I think that's a sign of how far the league has come, and it's a sign of how far this team has come. People are already in the mode of, this is an MLS Cup favorite. They should be, and they should be contending for the supporter shield as well. This is, I don't see how you get around the fact that this is a favorite in the East.
Yeah, I think for me, with regards to TFC, two things will be really interesting to watch this year. One is, they need more goals from midfield. You know, Sebastian Giovinco and Jozy Altidore supplied the majority of the goals last year. And I think guys like Drew Moore and Justin Morrow were third and fourth in goal scoring. So, and I know they, you know, they purposely wanted to have Michael Bradley play a more defensive role, but they have to get more, I think, offensive production out of the midfield. So I'll be interested to see if Bradley can score more goals, if Cooper can add goals to the mix, Toussaint Ricketts with a full season ahead of him, if he can do that. The other thing is, Drew Moore, I don't think he gets enough credit for how big of a, you know, difference maker he was for Toronto last year. He played 32 games, played every minute of those 32 games, and played 2,800 minutes, which was, I think, about 300 minutes more than any other player on the team. So he logged a lot of playing time. And I'm not sure that they have a lot of depth at the center back position this year, even with them playing 3-5-2, which is, I think, the template that they're going to use. So I'll be interested to see how they manage his minutes. If he picks up an injury, how do they deal with that? I mean, can Chris Mavinga, you know, potentially step in and fill that center back role? So for me, those are sort of two interesting stories to watch. But I'm with Dan. I think, you know, they have the core in place of that team last year, which was a well-balanced side. So I think they have to be considered, you know, if not the favorite in the Eastern Conference, then certainly one of them.
Yeah, and if you include the playoffs, Drew Moore was up near 3,500 minutes.
There you go.
For the season.
And he's 33.
Yeah,
so.
And now he's 33. So TFC definitely, and Vanny talked about it a little bit at training this week, yeah, that he has to, that they have looked into how they're going to manage his minutes a little bit better this year, and that's part of the reason they brought in the Mavingas and some of the other moves they made this season.
At the same time, the Haglunds and Zavaletas, who had breakout campaigns last year, and the concern there was, are they too inexperienced? What they went through last year was so invaluable, I think, to this team. Mm. And, you know, we do see often, you know, younger players drop off after a big campaign. That's going to be a big question for me, is how do those guys, can they continue to progress? And, you know, if Drew Moore does, you know, see his minutes managed more so than last year, who steps to the forefront? Is it one of those two guys? How much faith do you have in those two guys as being potential, you know, stalwarts for the next number of years at the center back position?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very valid question as well. I think both of them, Haglund and Zavaleta, they kind of went through ups and downs last year, you know, suffering injuries and then, you know, losses of form. I remember Zaglin had that really bad game against the Red Bulls where he committed that sort of mistake. And, you know, he was pretty much back, you know, if not the next game, then the one after that. And, you know, was, you know, a regular starter for the rest of the year, as was Haglund. So they really kind of solidified themselves as, you know, key pieces down the stretch. They're young players, as you said, James. So I'll be interested to see if they can duplicate the sort of the form that they showed over the second half of the season for the duration of this upcoming campaign.
But even the fullbacks too, right? I mean, yeah, they got so much out of Justin Morrow last year, and even Betashore. I mean, he had a hamstring injury that he nursed in almost the entire season, and you just wondered if there was any point it was just going to like fall off. But he managed to get through it, and I don't know if there is really a clear cut option behind either of them right now. I mean, Mavinga, I guess, could play left back a little bit if Morrow were to miss some time, and they're still, I think, looking at some options over the next week or so to have depth behind Steven Betashore, but there's not a whole lot there behind Beta. So I think those two positions as well, the fullbacks, especially the way that they drive up and down the field in this 3-5-2 formation, is big for Vandy this season.
The veterans moving forward, Jozy Altidore really won me over last year. You know, I was very, I won't say critical per se, but I had my concerns about him entering last season. He was a beast down the stretch, and obviously in the playoffs, he was just outstanding. What do you expect from Jose this year? The goal-scoring totals looked decent at the end of the season. There were injuries, obviously numerous call-ups. He needs to step up, doesn't he, and continue that. And if he can do that, that elevates TFC further.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, when you found like we always kind of felt like Josie had this untapped potential that we hadn't yet seen. I mean, you heard about how great he was in the Dutch league in the Eredivisie, and then he went over to England and you never really saw it, and people at Sunderland still hate him. But now that it seemingly has come together, we're still waiting to see if Josie can put it together for an entire season, because he has had the hamstring issues and the injury problems. And to me, I think potential wise, he is the best number nine forward in maybe in MLS, especially with the way that we saw him play down the stretch last year. I mean, TFC doesn't go to MLS Cup without him. And I think he gets underrated still a little bit being behind Sebastian Giovinco. But I think the only question mark for him is his health, and where is that going to be through the entire season and going away to the Gold Cup and doing all the different things that he normally does? How does TFC manage him? And it's nice that TFC has, like, their question marks are how do they manage their players through the season? But I think Josie kind of, you saw him realize his potential last year, and I think that continues going into this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think during the second half of the season, he was arguably the team's best player. I mean, he was...
Arguably the best player in MLS.
Yeah, I mean, he was lights out. I mean, he was scoring bunches of goals. He was playing with confidence. He was playing fearlessly. And, you know, I know we fixate on the goals sometimes, but what he does off the ball in terms of acting as that first line of defense, you know, using his, you know, big body and physical strength, the muscle, you know, defenders around, and hold up the ball to, you know, to create space for Seben to bring players into the game. That's invaluable. And I know it does. There's no stat for it, and it goes unrecognized a lot of times, but you need a player like that. And I think he fills that role admirably. So that he's, you know, with the scoring ability and the sort of hard work and the stuff that he does off the ball, I think is a tremendous player. And if he can continue that this year for the full duration of the year, then I think, you know, the sky's the limit for him.
Think about this team and its place in this market in Toronto. And you look at Michael Bradley, who's been pretty outspoken in recent weeks and months. Obviously a smart person as well. Do you see him becoming more of a figure in the Toronto sports scene this season? I mean, he's always been the periphery. He's let his football do the talking. But now that TFC have shown themselves to be a potential champion, a team that really captured the imagination of this city last year, has he now got the platform, do you think, to push that a little bit further? Do you want to see that?
I personally, I'd like to see it. And I think you're quite right. He does have the platform now that he could sort of, you know, exploit and do that. Knowing Michael, I mean, I'm not best friends with Michael Bradley, but I think knowing him enough the way that I do, I don't see it. He's a pretty private person, an introverted person. And I'm not sure it kind of suits his personality profile to sort of become and really put himself out there. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he gets pushed a little by the league and the club to, hey, you know, do a little bit more, show a little bit more personality. We're trying to create some buzz here. I just don't think it's in his DNA to do that.
It felt like he was trying to come out of
that
shell.
At the end of last year? Yeah, you're right.
And some of the way he spoke, the stories he was telling, talking about his, you know, like at his end of season availability, that long story he told about his kid going to school and all that right. Different type of stuff. Like, these are things that you wouldn't normally see from Michael Bradley in the past. I mean, I look at TFC as a smaller version of the Raptors in that they're still franchise-wise, they're still very young in comparison to the two head honchos in the city, being the Blue Jays and the Maple Leafs. So as long as TFC aren't in an MLS Cup playoff run, I think it's the diehards that are paying ultra close attention, and the casual fan's going to go to a game here or there, and they're going to jump on the bandwagon when the team gets back to MLS Cup playoffs next year.
It's a good point. But what bump will there be this year, do you think? Let's start the season in particular. You know, coming off that great, great season last year. Given that, you know, at the moment, the other competition in the city, the Leafs, are doing pretty well. There's going to be an exciting race to
the
playoffs there.
Raptors
are going to, yeah.
Both in the playoffs.
Yeah, right. So they're going to take away a lot of that attention. But what do you expect from this team? Do you think, I mean, yeah, the hardcores are there, and we know that the bandwagoners are waiting for that opportunity next fall, perhaps. But do you think you're going to see a bump in and a spike somewhat in TV numbers to start the season?
I have my doubts, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah,
I think it'll be roughly the same. And the only reason I say that is because being around sort of the preseason for the last, you know, month and a bit, however long it's been, I haven't really seen any new people, to be perfectly honest. Well, I shouldn't say that. Joshua Kloka, and I do want to mention this, is kind of the new TFCB reporter for The Athletic. So it's nice to see that that sort of website is, you know, upping its game with regards to TFC coverage. But, you know, last year during the playoffs and during the end of the regular season, I mean, there was, you could see the groundswell of media at the training every week, right? It's kind of died back down. Thank you very much. That's what I was going for. So, I mean, unless, you know, I think it's going to come down to winning, right? I mean, if they kind of go on this similar run that they did last year, then, you know, I suspect then we'll see the return of all the, you know, peripheral, I guess, for lack of a better word, media attention. But until then, I think it's going to be what it once was.
I wonder if you surveyed, 50 people on the street and asked them, when's TFC's first game? How many would know that it's this Saturday?
Yeah.
It sounds cynical. I just think that's kind of where the team still is. Like time and just growing a culture just takes so long. And TFC is still just entering their second decade of existence. So it's going to take more time. You're still integrating new fans who just really kind of fell. There's going to be a portion of fans that fell in love with this team towards the end of last year. And there's going to be more people that know are on the periphery of fandom, I guess. But it's still very realistically the fourth in the pecking order. And it's a distant fourth when it comes to trying and chasing the Raptors for, I guess, third on that sporting pecking order in Toronto.
And it doesn't seem as if the organization's quite happy to let the football do the talking and be their marketing arm, as opposed to previous eras of this club where they use fluff.
Yeah.
Mm. Bloody big deal, et cetera, where they pumped it in your face, you know, and it didn't really pay off. This organization, it seems to me that they just, you know what, slowly, you know, we'll get there. We see the soccer culture in this city growing, becoming more sophisticated. Another good playoff run, maybe two, maybe you need two or three more. I don't know.
Yeah.
That will lift the team to where it should be in this market. But having big, glossy, double-decker buses rolling around the city doesn't get the job done if you're not successful on the pitch.
Yeah, I was watching a movie the other night, and they had the Dawn of the Reds commercial in the lead-up to the film. And, you know, I'm sitting there, and I'm sitting next to my better half, and I'm wondering to myself, like, how many people realize that the footage in this commercial is real? Right? Yeah. Because you have the crazy fans and the smoke bombs,
yeah, exactly,
and all this different stuff. And it looks like something that was made up and that was staged. But no, that was MLS Cup night. That was on the march to the match against Montreal. This is what happens. And it happens on a regular basis with TFC fans and their march to the match for every home game. Not to that extent, but to a smaller, certainly a smaller march to the match on a regular home game. And I feel like that feeling still hasn't touched a great part of the city on just how much fun it is to be a part of this TFC family that's growing so much.
But do you think that in some regards might scare some elements of fan base off? Think, oh, you know, people that don't understand soccer, don't understand TFC, see those images. And they have this myth of what supporting a soccer team is, you know, the ultras.
They think they're copying hooligans.
Yeah, I don't want to go down there. That looks a bit dodgy. Like, that's just not the case. But I wonder if it scares off some potential fans a little bit. And yeah, maybe TFC don't want lightweight fans. Yeah. I don't know, but
yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I'm sure that there is some sort of element of that. But I think most people kind of recognize what TFC is and that it's a good night out. And it's an affordable night out as well, right? So I think that's one thing that it probably has going for itself much more than the Raptors or the Leafs.
Hey Dan, sorry, do you get to see most games from the press box, or do you get into the stands here and there?
I try to get to at least one game in the stands and bring my nephew every year, but most games I watch from the press box.
You do, yeah? You haven't missed a game, have you, in the last 10
years? I don't think
years?
I've ever watched a TFC game from the stands, to be perfectly honest.
See, I'm fortunate. I see a few games in the press box, but most weeks I get to sit in the stands and drink beer.
Yeah.
With the rest of the idiots out there, it is a lot of fun, and don't be scared of.
My nephew is like, I took him to his first game last year, and he's hooked. I mean, And he's not even, he doesn't even like soccer. Like, he's not going to wake up on a Saturday morning and watch the Premier League or anything like that. But I think it's a, you know, it's that whole experience is just something unlike anything else in Toronto. It almost feels like you can, when you get into BMO Field, you can let loose a little bit and you can yell at the ref and nobody's going to, you know, nobody's going to bat an eye at you and they're going to join you when you do it. And that, that sense of, I feel like there's more of a family, not like when a community feel when you go to a TFC game,
yeah,
where
very much.
You sit next to somebody and it's not as standoffish, or it's like you get into that mode with those people around you.
Yeah,
it becomes
I've
a community family feel.
That section,
yeah,
like you recognize people. You may not know their name, but every week you see them, you talk to them, right? And by mm-hmm. the end of the season, it's great. And then I get pulled into the press box covering the games. Oh, damn it. It's not as much fun.
Standing in the back during yeah, MLS Cup final, right?
At least I was inside, unlike a lot of people I know who are stuck in those tents freezing their asses off.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I think it's going to be a fun season. And listen, if you do like ref bashing, it's a great league to follow.
The really VARs are going to take away from that, you know?
The video
review, you know? It's going to take away. Like, yeah. No more mistaken identity, red cards. Like, these things aren't going to happen anymore.
And Howard Webb might kind of descend in some rope from a helicopter with a cape behind him and start beating the crap out of fans who are you know, abusing his people.
Which of the Uniteds does Howard Webb end up backing? Is it DC United, Atlanta United, yeah. Minnesota?
Like, ba-dum-bum.
That's a very good point. Yeah, maybe that's the big question this season. Which team will Howard Webb support? Montreal have a very fervent fan base. They had a great playoff run after a very inconsistent regular season. New look team, as far as Didier Drogba is no longer there this year, but let's be honest, he played a peripheral part late in the season last year. You had the Piatti-Mancosu partnership, of course, up front. Still an aging midfield, but do you get the impression that this might be a step back for Montreal, or is it a case of just getting to the playoffs and then the seasoned veterans will get the job done again?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. I mean, I don't tend to disagree that there's no doubt that they kind of sway a little bit older than Toronto and, you know, most of the league. But I like what they've done. I mean, we talked about TFC's core being in place. They have the same starting 11 from that playoff series against Toronto. So, you know, and they've added key pieces in Daniel Lovitz, because I think that kind of brings some you know, youth and, you know, a little bit dynamic attacking ability to them. They're going to bring in the Swiss designated player whose name I can't remember. You'll forget.
Blair and Jamiley.
There you go. Who plays in Serie A with Bologna. So I think that's going to be a good addition. I think Piatti is one of the most underrated players in all of MLS. I think he's, you know, an incredibly dangerous, you know, creative playmaker. And I think he's just so unheralded. And Mancuso showed a lot last year, to the point where he displaced, you know, Didier Drogba as the team's starting striker. The fact that they've signed him now to a 2-year permanent deal, I think that's great. So, yeah, I think, you know, what'll be interesting to see is if, you know, Montreal, as I said, the older team, if they can kind of stay healthy and if they can get by. But I'm expecting good things from them.
Yeah, I'm not as high on Montreal, I guess, on this year. I mean, they were impressive down the stretch last year, but there's a lot of question marks there. You know, the age of the midfield is one of them. I think, you know, on par, like those guys, like their midfield rotations are better than almost anybody else in the league. They're just such a smart trio and they've played together for long enough that they work in unison so well. But the age of that midfield does scare me. Can they go the entire season playing that same style? Or, because they haven't really done anything to improve, you know, they're like mm-hmm. they're going to be a counter team, and that's how they get their job done, and everybody knows it. And yeah, when they get on the counter, they are scary because they have that pace and the magician work of Nacho Piatti, but they also don't have a very good defense, and TFC really exposed that in the postseason. They gave up over 50 goals last year, and they haven't improved that defense. And they stunk on set pieces, which TFC exposed in the playoffs as well. So I wonder how they are going to make these improvements when personnel-wise, I'm wondering, they haven't really done anything to help what ailed them so much, even though it was an impressive run last year.
Although Domodura says that they were better than TFC last year anyway. Maybe they need to.
That was pretty funny.
They also had a negative goal differential last year. So, like, all of these things about Montreal kind of worry me. And I get that they still have a very strong attacking presence there with as long as Piatti's there. I feel like there's a book on them and teams are going to exploit that this year.
I get the impression that that's the case as well. We'll see. I mean, that, like you said, they have the ability to hurt some teams, but that midfield, I mean, it's savvy, it's classy, it's old as hell. You know, it's as simple as that, right?
I wonder how this Argentine kid is going to be once he comes in. I don't even want to pretend to mention his name. And also, I really like Demile as a player, mm-hmm. but we'll see how that works, how they incorporate him come mid-season. But again, I mean, if Piatti gets hurt, what is this team?
Yeah. Interesting, too, that it'll be Patrice Bernier's last season. So, and I think, you know.
Yeah, you believe that?
Oh, yeah.
You think for sure?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, he'll want to go out with a bang. And I think, you know, the last two or three seasons, he's kind of floated in and out of the starting lineup. Now it appears that he's going to be sort of if not a starter, then he'll see regular playing time this year. So I'm kind of curious how he'll do with a full season of where he's, you know, ahead of him or where he's expected to be a major contributor. Because I still think even at, I think 36, 37,
he's 37 still, now, isn't he?
I think 37, yeah.
Could be near 38.
Yeah. But, you know, we've been saying the last couple of years, oh, he's too old, but he is still one of the classiest guys.
It was under on the Frank ball. Kloppus. We thought he was done.
Yeah, yeah. He was Montreal's best player in the series against Toronto.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah. He was incredible. Like turning back the clock, Patrice Bernier. And, you know, I wonder how they manage his minutes this year as well. But, he's special. And I would hope for a better send off than I'm giving him right now. But, I look at other teams in the East, like New England and Columbus, and I really think that they're improved. And Chicago's really improved. I still think Chicago's got a lot of question marks, but in terms of New England and Columbus, I have them pegged as playoff teams this year and Montreal not.
And as Vancouver found out, you have a couple of bad patches in the regular season, you're out the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be careful. Vancouver have made some noise this offseason. They had to. It was a very disappointing campaign last year. Freddie Montero back in MLS. Breck Shea's come over to Vancouver as well. Jordi Reyna, I don't know much about this guy, but apparently he's legit.
Yeah. Although he'll be out for, I think, until September or something like that.
Yeah. Is it September? Is that long?
Well, it's a couple months at least. Really? Yeah. I don't know if it's September, but
Kikuta Man is back though, right? From obviously they lost him for the end of last season as well. But you look at Vancouver's moves, do you see that being enough for this team to make the playoffs this year in what is a pretty tight bunch of teams in the West?
I think so. I mean, like, offensively, they were pretty dreadful last year. It was clear that they had to sort of bring in some goal scorers, and I think Montero and Shea will hopefully, provide that scoring punch. What'll be interesting to see is on the back end, because two seasons ago, they were, I think, if not the best sort of defensive team in the West, then one of the best. And then last year, I mean, they had lead goals, and they really hadn't changed much. I mean, it was the same personnel. So I think they have to really kind of buckle down defensively this season and really provide that solid defensive foundation for then, you know, guys like Montero and Shea to really thrive.
I'm wondering, like, I still think that midfield beside Laba, they can't really seem to figure it out. And I think that's where a lot of their issues kind of start from is kind of connecting midfield and attack. And also, is Laba continuously getting suspensions and all those different types of things? Wasson continuously getting suspensions. Those are the questions that I have about Vancouver. And I think that Western Conference, it's kind of hard to, for me at least, to project Vancouver as a playoff team just with how many other quality teams there are in the West.
Is it a harder league to predict than MLS?
Tough to say. I don't think so.
I don't think
another soccer league or
no, any league, any sport. Certainly in North America. Yeah, I mean, there really isn't going to be a surprise champion, no matter who it is.
Right.
You know, really. I mean,
Minnesota
that might be a surprise. Yeah. But I mean, with that, you know, with it's been a pretty quiet winter, I think, for Major League Soccer. And, you know, we see just get into the show in the playoffs, and anything can really happen in this league more perhaps than any other league. I think it makes it for exciting sport.
I do too. I mean, you look at it like 2 years ago, Portland and Columbus played an MLS Cup final. Right. Last season, neither one made the playoffs. You saw, you know, the, I mean, look at last year too with Seattle. I mean, had that dreadful run through the first half of the season, and, you know, they were essentially out of it in July.
Yeah.
And then the second half of the season, I'm not sure there was a better team in Major League Soccer. And then, you know, they went on to win the final. So I think you're quite right, James, at least in North America, I can't think of a league that has more sort of parity and that more element of, anything can happen, anyone can win it, than Major League Soccer.
Well, even Colorado last year, they're a prime example. Like, everybody had them as maybe the worst team in the league, and they were competing for the supporter shield right down to the finish. And they did it on the back of a strong defense. But, you know, they did it. And so you wonder which team could be that team this year. It seems like there's always one in MLS. It's hard to project, especially, you know, the expansion teams. There's just not much of a track record of success from those types. But otherwise, I do think it's the most unpredictable league to predict. And also, like, on a week-to-week basis, if you were to just, like, have an MLS pool where you said, I'm going to pick all 10 games each and every week, good luck even getting 50%. Like, it's, you won't even be close.
This MLS survivor pool being organized here at Sportsnet. My God, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck, boys. You're touching that.
You'd be done after, like, week one or two.
Not touching it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, it's terrible because, you know, you think, okay, maybe I'll just prey on the home teams and, then, you know, I don't know, Baldomero Toledo gives you a red card, an unwarranted red card, and everything's gone out the window.
Yeah, absolutely. You're looking at the defending champions. Seattle Dempsey is apparently healthy again. That's great. And a whole season with Nick Lodero. Are they your favorites in the West?
I think so. I mean, again, it's like you said, they've got Lodero. Jordan Morris is going to be back, again, a full season ahead of him. Lodero, we only really got a small sample size of what he can do. I'm really curious to see what he can do with a full campaign ahead of him. I think he's, you know, like Piatti, could be like a major impact player for Seattle. So yeah, I definitely think you have to look at a team like Seattle as, you know, favorites in the West.
I actually like Dallas in the West, and I think they're probably the most likely to, like, I don't know if it's ever happened, but repeat as supporter shield winners. They're just, you know, top to bottom, they're just such a strong team, and they don't change a whole lot. They have a lot of young players that come up through their ranks, probably the best academy in MLS. Mauro Diaz is going to be out for the first half of the year, so they go out and they get Javier Morales, who's made his name with Real Salt Lake. They just have so many interesting players, and they find, like, they uncover players, so many of them from South America. You wonder, like, what kind of scouting system that they have. But they seemingly always have the next one coming. And you look at some of their moves. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to say that I've watched any of these guys play in Ecuador or wherever else, but they have a track record of uncovering these guys and then finding ways to give them success in MLS.
Yep, absolutely. It's going to be a really fascinating season. Atlanta, apparently, from what I understand, again, they signed some young DPs. I don't know much about them from overseas, but going that template to build a team and bringing some veterans in there as well. Guzan's going to be there. Kenwin Jones.
Yeah.
Remember him? Yeah. Remember him? He of
seems like a guy that would work in MLS, though, like style of play-wise. Yeah,
you could be right. No, it's going to be exciting. I look forward to it. Is there one before we leave, one big question you're hoping to be answered this season in MLS? More than anything, be it TFC related or otherwise?
Ooh, good one. I'm really curious just to see how the video assistants with regards to the referees is really going to work. And I guess even more so, I'm more interested in, because remember last year early on, they were really kind of clamping down on certain kind of fouls. And, you know, I think a lot of us were complaining that, you know, this is going overboard. It's like everything is a foul now. That seemed to kind of go away, and they kind of evened out, my impression was, as the season went on. I'm curious to see how that'll play out this year, if it's going to be the same directive from MLS, and if so, is it going to be sustained throughout the whole season? That's one thing that I'll be looking for.
I think the question is, does the new era of young designated players work? Like you mentioned with Atlanta bringing in some exciting young DPs. You know, TFC is up against Real Salt Lake. Their big offseason signing was by the name of Albert Rusnak, who came over from Holland, just a 22-year-old player. you know, you're seeing teams forget about the Frank Lampards and Steven Gerrards of the world and make that switch. Will it work? And will it excite people in the same way that those names bring in the casual fan? I think, you know, the South American players have flair, but sometimes they don't always work out. So I think that to me is the biggest question, if some of these young DPs end up working out.
I think you're right. I think in some ways this is a defining season for Major League Soccer and what is going to be their journey going forward, because will it be no longer that the Lampard, Gerrards, the old guys, big money, past their best, or will they focus on these young diamonds in the rough, so to speak?
I mean, I still think that, you know, like Ibrahimovic, I have him pegged to probably be the first signing of LAFC next year. It just makes so much sense. But I still think there are going to be some of those players.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, but, I mean, listen, if Wayne Rooney, for example, says, yeah, I'm leaving United, I'm going to MLS, someone's going to buy him.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, 100%.
There's a certain level of name, I suppose.
Yeah.
But that is the second tier names, which I think you might see, you know, dissipating somewhat.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, I mean, the young players, if Atlanta works out, I mean, if Atlanta works with the way that they've constructed their team, I think it's going to change the way a lot of MLS front offices do their business.
Yeah. Yep. Well, for the health of the league, that is probably the right way to go about it, let's be honest. And listen, I love sexy name DPs. I think it's great. You know, it's fun to watch. But for the good of the league, you want to see the actual quality improve. And I don't think you get that by signing a 35-year-old has-been, even if you can sell us a shirt.
Well, I mean, in fairness to Lampard, I mean, when he was gone last year, that's when
Gerrard actually.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
Lampard played pretty well. But Stevie G, who I love, I mean, my God, that didn't work out very well, did it?
Once Frank Lampard, you know, gave up his dreams of being on television during the Euros, he ended up being pretty good for New York.
Hey, Landon Donovan is gone, right? That short comeback was just that, a short comeback?
Yeah, I don't think he latched on anywhere after that.
No.
He did not re-sign with the LA Galaxy, I don't believe, so.
I thought that would have been a bigger deal than it actually was when it happened. But anyway, that is MLS, and it kicks off this weekend. Before we go, this weekend, of course, the Prem continues on Sportsnet, starting 9:30 Eastern on Saturday. Leicester, the Craig Shakespeare Leicester, coming off a famous win against Liverpool, taking on Hull.
That had to hurt, eh?
It still hurts. It's getting extremely frustrating. It is. But all those idiots out there saying it's time to can Klopp, shut up. What are you talking about? We'll discuss that on the broadcast later this weekend, because we also have Liverpool against Arsenal, noon Eastern, on Sportsnet and Sportsnet World on Saturday. We're also back on Sunday with Man City against Sunderland. So lots of action this weekend on Sportsnet. Hope you enjoyed that. Dan Riccio of TFC Pierce Side.
Yeah, there it is.
Thank you very much. I was thinking PTS for some reason, fan-related stuff, right?
No, I haven't reached those heights yet.
Mondays, 11 o'clock on The Fan, and also you catch the podcast version on Thursdays, correct?
Yeah, Fridays are match preview on Thursday/Friday.
And there's one right now set to drop.
Yeah, exactly, against for Real Salt Lake. Season opener.
And JMO, Sportsnet.ca, anything exciting we can talk about coming up in the next few days?
Well, we're in kind of MLS season preview mode, so we'll have previews on the three Canadian teams and other stuff. We'll be looking at Arsenal and Liverpool, and we'll have audio of TFC Pitchside. So if you don't have iTunes, you can go to the website, and the audio of all of the TFC Pitchside shows will be there.
Do you need a blog from me this week?
You know what? You could probably take the weekend off.
Yeah, sweet.
I think so. Yeah.
All right. See, I would write one if you needed one.
No. I think
it's
we're
a liberating feeling right there.
It's great.
Yeah. No, I think we're good because we got a lot of MLS
That's
content.
There's a lot of stuff there, right?
Yeah. You get buried. So.
And I wrote one last week, which was ditched. Never got.
Well, no, so.
Ranieri. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm easy to work for.
I know you're very easy, and I do appreciate it. And you're a great editor as well. You totally reworked my Ranieri story, which was about two paragraphs into about 10 paragraphs. Like, I was like, I didn't write this.
I should get a credit for that. No.
Well, had I known it was going to be a longer piece, I would have. Yes. Anyway, whatever. It worked out well enough.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, JMO Riccio. I'm James Sharman, Eric Prime behind the glass. We'll chat to you on Monday. Bye.